Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. I've invited Roberta Herzog, the author of The Akashic Records, Your Journey Through Time and Ancient Wisdom Stories. So many of you had requested that I do another show with Roberta, and I'm very excited to have her back with us. She didn't really want me to say this, but she's the first female archbishop, and we're excited to talk to her. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Roberta Herzog to It's Rainmaking Time. Good morning.
Thank you, Kim.
Now that I said what you didn't want me to say, what is an archbishop? Explain it to us.
Well, an archbishop is above a bishop, and the title is granted only in a church that has apostolic succession, and that literally means back to Jesus. And our church does. It has 13 historic lines back to Jesus, and we have it all documented. And since our church is very matriarchal, there's never been a male archbishop primate in the past, but there's only females. And so since our church has apostolic succession, and I've been, you know, anointed quite a long time ago, I mean, really, you know, from a good, positive point of view and an accurate point of view. I've been a bishop and now an archbishop and archbishop primate for many years. I don't say that to many people because I feel that the person who has a lot of responsibility in their life has responsibility to teach the truth and not to say, oh, how wonderful you are, you know? And so I really kind of downplay all of that. From my point of view, I'm just a little lady that reads the records. I'm nicely trained, and I love to give the truth. And it happens to come with a couple of titles, and that's how I kind of look at it.
We had a very positive response to the Book of Life, the segment that we did a few weeks ago. And in general, I wanted to invite you back. I wanted to talk a little bit about soulmates and souls that come together in life. I wanted to ask you if you could make a distinction for us so that we understand when you speak about something, what the frame of reference is. What is the distinction between a soul and a spirit?
Okay. You've only asked about 1,000 questions there. That's okay. That's good. Don't
you? I was born in the right kind of family. We asked 1,000 questions in one question.
Don't change. We couldn't handle it if you change.
You can call me the Rebbe anytime. Go ahead.
I'll call you the Rebbe. Okay. All right. A spirit is kind of like a slang word in some cases for a person who has gone over into the heaven world. And a spirit could be a demonic spirit. A spirit could be a heavenly spirit and or angelic force. A soulmate, I mean, it almost has little to do with what I've just said, because a lot of people say for me that, oh, he's my soulmate, she's my soulmate. No, it's hardly possible, because we only have one mate of our soul throughout all time space. We don't have a person over here, a person over there. We just don't. The true mate of our soul, or soulmate, is literally the other portion of our what is called permanent atom, A-T-O-M. And the permanent atom looks very, very much like the Chinese yin-yang symbol. And if it floats up in front of you with your two spiritual hands, you can pull it apart and put it back together again. And this is exactly what our soul looked like when it was whole. And God basically created all of us as a whole atom with a positive or masculine and negative feminine polarity, feminine and masculine not being good and bad. And so all of you out there listening to this show are either the positive masculine or the negative feminine portion of your permanent atom, whatever the sexual orientation that you have. If you're a man, you could be a male portion of the permanent atom inside, in which case you would be male-male. If you are a female portion of the permanent atom and female vibrating on the outside, that would make you negative-negative. However, there are people who are positive male inside and feminine outside, as on with the body. And there are people who are the opposite. They are feminine on the inside and masculine on the outside. And we have to understand all this in order to learn the lessons of life. You have to be fully functional. As I said, I believe in the last time that we were having the happiness of being with one another, you have never been a gorilla. This is absurd what they're teaching with evolution. You have never been a tree. You've never been a giraffe or a reptile or an amoeba.
Why do so many of us believe it?
Well, because Darwin, you know, came up with a theory, and Darwin's right, and all of this, what he isn't. He is not right. We are not, as a matter of fact, we are descendant from God, and truly the gorillas, the simian, the entire simian line of evolution, are descending from us, not from them, and that's from Atlantis, and I can go into that in a little bit when we might discuss Atlantis. But let me just finish with this one, because it's a whole new interesting something to look at. And, you know, a lot of people now are realizing that evolution is not a truth. And we've been teaching it for many, many, many decades as truth, and it is not. I've never, by the way, in all the readings I've done, in thousands of readings, I have never seen a human being that is on the other end of the phone that has ever been anything less than a human being. I've never seen an orangutan out there. I've never seen a chimpanzee. I have never seen someone at the tree. This is absurd. All right, now that I've said my bit, you know, I'll go forward. And so the soulmate is the other portion of your permanent atom. And God only allows maximum, now don't hold me to exactly this amount, but it's a little more or a little less, about 2,000 pairs of true soulmates to be on the earth at any point in time. And that means that there's for about 4,000 people, give or take, you know, 20 or 30 people either way. And they are supposed to be together. They have a contract to be together. And they are together for the upliftment of humanity. And they work together as a unit, a pair of people, a unitary pair, to help humanity. Now, an example of soulmates, whether you like their philosophy of politics or not, it doesn't matter. It is Ronald and Nancy Reagan. I mean, everything he said, it's Nancy and I, Nancy and I. And they made a quite an impact on the planet. And so they were permitted to be together, even though they were married before, but they found each other, and look what happened after he met Nancy. And so the soulmates work with one another, help with one another, and they do everything to keep each other going, but they are literally the other portion of their permanent atom.
When you say they come in by contract, can we just describe that?
All right. Just, for example, as you go to a lawyer and you make a contract that this is what you're going to do, and the other person says, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and you sign on the dotted line. Now, most of the time we hope that you do what you're supposed to do and I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. But that's why we have a lawyer. So what I see, and I call myself, this is with tongue-in-cheek, of course, a karmic lawyer. I deal in contracts. And so in the heaven world, yeah, I like that one.
I love that. Say that again.
Love it. You're welcome. And so in the heaven world, when we make our contracts with souls, we make a contract with our birth mother, our birth father, our sisters, brothers, husbands, wives, children, teachers, friends, etc., that we're going to come in at a certain point in time, and we're going to do certain things for them. We're going to complete what it is we did not complete with them in a prior lifetime, and or they're going to do the same with and for us. We make a contract. This is what you're going to do. This is what I'm going to do. The problem happens when we come into embodiment, and let's just say that I meet Henrietta over here, and Henrietta has a contract with me to pay back to me some things that she did to me, let's just say in Israel. And she was supposed to be my best friend. She was supposed to help me and be supportive, etc. And she comes in and she tries to be my friend, but what does she do? She does what she did in the Israeli lifetime. she talked behind my back, and she betrayed me. So she went backward to old habits, and she forgot the promises and the covenant. She forgot the contract. But here I am trying to ratify my end of the contract, and I'm waiting around and waiting and waiting for Henrietta to repay that debt, and it's not going to happen. And so people come to me, and they say, you know, what is happening? They cry, and I say, okay, let me see what the contract was. And so this is why we use the law of forgiveness to help to balance out that contract. And so we have contracts for everything. I'm not talking about raising your hand and lowering your arm. That's silly. But the main things in our life are done with contracts, and we have the free will. This is where free will comes in again, to make a mess of our lives. We have the free will to be victorious also.
Why do you think it is that most of us can't remember our contracts?
Thank God we can't remember it. Literally, thank God. Kim, what would it be? Let's just say you and I are living right now in the 21st century. We were born in the 20th century. And we come in without that seal of forgetfulness on our forehead. And we look around as we grow up, and we do not see our mother as our mother, and our father as our father, and our sisters and whatever. We see these people as they were to us historically, not only one time, but all the different times that they've been together with us. We remember the contrast. We remember what they look like and what they did. You would be insane in minutes. You wouldn't know what time period you're living in. You wouldn't know what language to speak, what religion you were going to follow. You wouldn't know anything. We would all be quite crazy. And civilization would have collapsed aeons of time ago if we didn't have that seal of forgetfulness. Thank God, literally thank God, that we can start anew and that we can look at people, give them a brand new sheet of paper to write on with us. We have the opportunity, and that still small voice of conscience inside us that's connected to our soul says, wait a minute, you better do this properly with Murgatroyd. You know, you better do this in a better way and speak to her in a nicer tone. And you need to do this and this with your daughter or this and this with your son.
Why do we incarnate then? My understanding from your work is that we choose to incarnate. Is it a choice?
Of course it is.
Why?
We have a choice because that's part of free will. There was a woman who came to me. I don't know if I told this story the last time. She came to me and she said, Roberta, I just don't connect with anything on this planet. No one seems familiar to me. I don't even know whether this reincarnation thing is truth or not. I'm trying to understand. I just don't know anyone. No one's familiar. I've traveled. No place is familiar to me. I feel like I'm just alone on this planet. And I said, well, just a minute, calm down. I looked at her records and I saw exactly what the problem was. And I said, darling, this is the first, I call everybody darling. You know, at my age, you can do that. So
no worries.
I said, look, I've never seen this before, and I will probably not see it again. And she said, what is it? And I said, dear one, you have not reincarnated in over a million years. And there was a silence at the end of the phone. I said, are you okay? She said, that makes sense. I said, well, let me tell you why, because you were afraid. A million years ago, you were not even living on this planet, and you wanted to incarnate here, and you got cold feet. You saw what was involved on planet Earth, and you said no, and you kept saying no, opportunity after opportunity, and no one is forcing you, and no one ever forced you to reincarnate, but you knew that you had to work with the promises and the covenants that you made to God Almighty to grow and to learn. See, that's the whole reason to reincarnate, because we want to learn, we want to grow, and we want to go literally back to God in our pristine form, in our pure, wholly understandable form, being not only fully functional, but to be what would be called a co-creator with God. That means we have to master everything.
Okay. There are going to be people listening who are very positive people who still may say in the back of their minds listening to this, then explain Hitler. Tell me the contract Hitler made. Tell me how that was acceptable and tell me how that works in the context of karma that you're translating. What would you say?
I would say the same thing. First of all, Hitler was never supposed to come in to do what he did. Hitler, this is the truth, sadly. Hitler did not come in to do all of that. Hitler, however, was a very base, earthian soul. I believe that I gave you the difference between a planetarian soul and an earthian soul.
Well, go ahead and create the frame of reference here so we can hear properly what you're going to say about Hitler.
Very good. All right. An earthian soul is one who has never reincarnated on any other planet except Earth. They have a me, I attitude. I'll do this for you, but what's in it for me if I do this for you? They do not come for Akashic readings. They believe in the doctrine of monolife. When you die, that's it. You go to heaven or to hell, whatever. And there's nothing out there but oblivion. You either believe one of the three things, heaven, hell, or oblivion. And so make the most of everything now. And so money and things and success in the definition of money and things are the way in which we term ourselves brilliant and successful. This soul was a very low earthian soul, and he was taken over by one of the powers and principalities. Powers and principalities is the biblical name for evil. And the one thing that evil loves the best is a person with lack of hope, lack of faith, and lack of love for God. And these were the things that were sadly in the soul that we call Hitler in his life, and they took him over totally, and they worked with him and through him, and the whole idea was to destroy as many people as possible, and they did. And I'm not saying at all that Hitler had no choice here to do this. Hitler did have a choice, but he was offered all of these perks, power and money and glory being above them all. And that's what evil does. Evil offers those three things.
But that evil in this context, for example, and I know this is a very painful context, so I know it's a volatile context, even though we're talking about it, but what you're referring to as evil worked through other beings, other souls, to commiserate with him to carry out the Third Reich.
That's right. Sadly, there are many, many souls on this earth who are earthian souls. Remember, 99.999% of all the souls on earth at any time are earthian souls. Right now, there are more planetarian souls than there ever have been, but still it's an extremely low number because of where we are in the history of time.
Now, let us just suppose that listeners have come in and they think that they understand the principles of what you're talking about. They connect to it. They've thought about it before, and they could see that. But maybe they don't connect with your storyline about it or what you're calling as truth. They may hear it as just your take on it rather than the truth. So my question to you is, what does this have to do, for example, with karma with groups? Did those that participate in the Third Reich, for example, is that karma with groups? There was a group that had violent, vile, and negative actions toward others. Is that karma with the group?
All right, you've asked several questions here. So the first question, the answer to it, is that, yes, it was their free will to make a decision to join that which was negative. And with the promise that Germany was going to be strengthened economically, remember, the reason why all this took place was because evil said, I'm going to fix the poverty. I'm going to fix the lack of money. I'm going to fix all this. Just follow me.
Right. The conditions at that time there were resonating for a rally for something to fix it.
That's correct. And evil comes in and says, I'm going to do this. And evil selects the people or person who is the most vulnerable to be taken over. And this man was vulnerable to be taken over.
So when you say evil, to define terms so that we know how to listen to you, what does that mean?
Satan, that which is absolutely the most negative force on earth. Satan is, well, whatever you want to call that, you know, the devil, Satan, whatever, is the prince of this planet, sadly. Right? He's losing his grip, so he's trying to work hard.
Why don't Jewish people believe in the devil?
They believe in, not in a devil per se, but they believe in a force, and they do believe in what is called Gehenna and Sheol. And it's connected to the temple, and Gehenna, and it was the place outside the Temple Mount where they spilled all of the blood from the sacrifices and so forth. And Sheol was a place kind of in between heaven and hell, so to speak, or what we call hell, where they didn't know where to put those who were so negative and nasty and terrible who happened to be Jews. And so they kind of let God take care of it. Now, that's just in a quick synopsis here. They really don't know, because in Judaism we have the concept of God as one without a second. And just because someone doesn't believe in something doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Correct.
And so it's not the way you put it. It's my way of looking at something. It's my spin on something. No one has to believe anything that I'm saying. I'm only saying that I am coming to this dialogue this afternoon with a lot of love and with almost 40 years of work in this very specific field that has everything to do with reincarnation and karma. For example, there are several people that have come to me over the years, and they have said to me on the phone that they're Jewish, and they, cancel, they hate being Jewish. They hate all Jews, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, I think that's something we have to look into. And each one of these persons, I think there were three of them, their immediate past lifetime was as a Nazi in Germany. And they, cancel, they heavily despised, they hated the Jews. And so now they had to come back into an embodiment in the same ethnic group, the same religion that they tormented and they hated so much.
Can you explain to the audience, when you say cancel, why you're doing that?
Cancel is what I call the cosmic eraser. And I devised this many, many years ago, and it helps, if you wish to use it, to work with your thoughts and your words, making them as positive and as creative as possible. And so when I see a negative word in a book of life, I have to say exactly what's there, but I can cancel it out so that when the person hears it on the phone and when they hear it over the tape, it will have no energy. And I'm doing the same thing because Kim is recording this. And so anyone who hears this, they will hear the words, but the energy of the negative word that I've said will have absolutely no power whatsoever.
Fantastic. That's a very creative thing.
Yes, and it works. You can either say cancel, or cancel clear.
Lovely. I want to go back to the reincarnation about animals, when you said, you know, you've never been a gorilla. So many people have animals and have connections to their pets. Do the animals have a karma with us, from your perspective?
There is reincarnation to a degree in the animal kingdom, but it's very, very different from you and I as human beings. You and I have what is called a divine monad, M-O-N-A-D. Monad is a Latin word, and it means one. And I described to you what the female portion and the male portion of the permanent Adam was, and that it's, you know, in the shape of this yin-yang, and it's totally different, and that is the soul that reincarnates. Now, when we have our precious animal friends, they also reincarnate. However, it's different. They have what are called group souls, and they don't reincarnate into other groups. For example, you can make that word kingdoms. So, for example, all the felines, which includes our little pussycats, as well as the big jungle cats, all of the canines, including our wonderful dogs, including wolves and bears and jackals and so forth, all of the aviary, all the birds, including the highest bird in the bird kingdom, which is the hummingbird. Reptiles have a different group soul. Every animal has a group soul. And the reptiles, for example, such as the turtles and the alligators and the snakes, they can never become a cat or a dog. A cat can never become a dog. A dog can never become a bird. So they reincarnate within the animal kingdom.
Got it.
It's very simple. So birds and cats and dogs and so forth do not have individual records. They can be found, however, if you have reincarnated with little Fluffy the cat. I can find Fluffy the cat, if you give me her name now, through your Akashic records. And I can say, I'm making this up, that you and little Fluffy the cat were in Egypt together, and little Fluffy the cat was a female tigress. And the priestess, let's just say, in an Egyptian temple, you were in charge of all the cats. And so she was under your tutelage, and you were the only one that can work with that cat and with the other cats that guarded the temple. And so she comes back with you now in this 21st century embodiment, and as little Fluffy. And, you know, she maybe looks like a cat. She's striped and so forth, a big cat, but she's little, and she has to learn how to be a little Fluffy house cat. Now, she pulls all the information about all the cats that have ever been in private homes from that group soul. Because when you are a little pussycat and you go into the heaven world, you take with you all of the information, all of the love or lack of it that you've had from the human family. And it enriches or decreases that feline group soul. It's the same thing if you are a big elephant. Let's just say you're you've taken an embodiment as an elephant, not you personally, but the elephant soul goes into the elephant mammals, and he takes or she takes from the elephant group soul, because there's only one elephant group soul, which includes the mammoths and so forth, and getting all the information before she reincarnates of what it's like to be an elephant. And so it's the same thing with a bird. A bird could be a precious little parrot. It could be a big cockatoo. It could be an eagle. And so all the birds reincarnate within their group soul.
Very interesting. What do you think about near-death experiences and the fact that so many people have had them all over the world for so many years and come back to talk about them? What is your take on what heaven is, what we should do, what the process is? What is your take on near-death experiences and where that soul goes?
Just a little question.
Just a little one. I like the little questions that have 40 questions in one question.
Glad I'm sitting down, you know. Okay. I think it would be good to begin the answer to that question is with what happens when you die. Because if I were to just answer the question, boom, and say, okay, Kim, what's the next question? It's not going to give you the foundation that I'd like you and the rest of the people who are listening to this to really hear. And this is, I'll make it as short as I possibly can. Within about a year of your physical transition that you knew in the heaven world that you were going to make at a certain year, I mean, you've programmed all of this. Unless you make another contract with God, there's a contract for how long you live and when the approximate date that you're going to go over is and the year that you're going to pass over. I mean, everything is written there, unless, of course, you make another contract, which you can, but it's got to be ratified by God Almighty, and that's a totally different other subject. Now, so let's just say that you have to live, make this easy for myself, 50 years, 5 months, 5 weeks, 5 days, and so forth. And again, I'm just making it easy for myself. And that 50th year comes, and there's something in the January month of that year that you just feel, you know, I want to call my Aunt Matilda, I want to call my Aunt Murgatroyd, I want to call Sally and Harry and so forth. And you think you're just kind of saying, hi there, and in essence, you're really saying goodbye. And you say, you know, a little couple months later, I think I got to get my will together. Let me take my will out and, you know, take a look at it. Oh, I want to change this, I want to change that. I want to see what the life insurance policies are. So you begin to change. You begin to get your life together. And you don't think anything is really going to happen, but it does. And so within 3 weeks of your physical death, everything becomes more involved and more intense of what I just said. You absolutely need to get everything together. 3 days, however, beforehand, there's something that usually happens, and either you get sick or you're in the hospital, you have an accident, or just something happens when you're confined to bed. It usually happens that way. And within the 3 days, even if you're not confined to bed and you're still up and trotting around, there's an angel that is assigned to you. It is incorrectly called the angel of death. It's not. There's no angel of death. It's the angel of life, because you're given the opportunity to go home, and that's eternal life. So that angel is with you all the time. I mean, not in private moments, obviously, but with you, and trying to inspire you and to encourage you of what to do next. There are many, many times where a person is, the last day of their life, they're usually confined to bed in some way. And let's just say it's normal. You're confined to bed, or you wake up and you're not getting up, something's happening. The angel of death helps you to come out of the body. Normally, at the time of death, you usually see into the heaven world. And there are many levels of the heaven world. There's at least three heavens. Even in the Bible, you have the concept, you know, in my house there are many mansions. And if it were not so, you know, I would tell you. And also in the book of Revelation, it talks about the three heavens. And so the first heaven is what you see when you go over into the heaven world. The angel helps you out of the body and helps to cut what is called the silver cord. It's also called the golden cord. It either comes out of your chest where the heart chakra is, or even the throat chakra, the Vishuddha, or the third eye, or the top of the head. But wherever that cord is cut, that's it. You cannot get back into the body. And so the silver cord is cut. Hopefully there are people around to see you over into the heaven world. And your soul goes forward with angelic force and with your beloved teachers into the heaven world. And the wonderful concept is that your friends and family who have gone on are all there to meet you and to lovingly bring you home. There's almost always, if you are a religious person, usually a religious figure there. If you're a Christian, Jesus is there. Many people who are Jewish often see Moses or Abraham, Father Abraham. And so many times you see a magnificent archangel there. But almost always you see a magnificent light. Magnificent. And you go into the first heaven, and this is where heaven is really what you want it to be. If you think heaven is angels in clouds, okay, you'll find angels in clouds. There are the pearly gates and streets made of gold. That's fine. But when you say, you know, isn't there anything more here? And that same angel will come, and they will say, now you're ready to see what the real heaven world is. And you go into the third heaven, which is where the Akashic records for Earth are, by the way. The Akashic records for any planet are always one dimension higher than where the soul is existing. So right now, your Kim body, for example, is on the higher levels of the third dimension, bridging into the fourth. The Akashic records for Earth are on the seventh step of the fourth dimension. There are seven steps in every dimension. The step is just a level of evolution, that's all. And so that's where I have to go for reading the Akashic records for Earth. When I go into higher planets, I have to go much higher, because the life on other planets is much higher. And therefore, when you're ready to see what the heaven world really looks like, and it's called the Devachan, D-E-V-A-C-H-A-N, it means the realm of the angels.
I've never heard of that word except in your book.
Yes, well, that's what it's really called. Well, there's a lot of things in that book that people haven't heard about, because people are teaching falsehood. And that book, by the way, I didn't want to write the book. I really didn't, but I was told it was a mandate. No one else can write it. There's no one that's alive that has done this work as long as you do and has the ability to write. And so, okay, you don't turn God down. You know, that's the biggest guilt trip that there is. So, at any rate, you go into the Devachan, and it's magnificent. It's magnificent. You have flowers around, for example. Flowers sing to God. Everyone is praising God. And when you go for your life review, it's loving, it's beautiful, and no one judges us. We have to evaluate ourselves. Every thought, word, and deed, from the last breath of life back to an inclusive of the first breath of life. Now, I'll stop there because I want to go back to the near-death experiences. There are people that clinically die on an operating table or on the street, you know, with an accident. And they are taken out because clinically they're dead. And they are taken by the angel, but the silver cord is not severed because they're not supposed to die. However, they get a glimpse of that first world, of seeing mother, father, sister, brother, whoever has gone over before. They see them, and they see what heaven is like. They can meet their guides, teachers. They can have a visitation from Jesus. And they're told, you have to go home. It's not your time yet. And, of course, we don't want to do that because everything is so peaceful and beautiful in the heaven world. But we have to obey. Obedience is a very big law in heaven. And so we turn around and we occupy the body again because the silver cord has not been severed. And that same angel makes sure that we're back in our body and we get the help that we need to make that body healthy again.
You're very well versed in the Bible, 1 and 2. How come it is that the whole concept of reincarnation isn't mentioned in the Bible? Is it alluded to?
Yeah. The word reincarnation is not in there because that's a recent word. However, there are many places where reincarnation is alluded to, many places. And, you know, in the last class, I believe I, you know, told you about a couple of the places. I don't remember all of them.
You mean in the last segment?
Yes, in the last segment that was class number one. I remember I told you that the Akashic Records are mentioned, and that it implies reincarnation.
You're right. It does imply reincarnation.
It does, and Malachi 3:16 and Revelation 20:12. The thing is that there are many, in Job, there's several mentions of reincarnation in Job, the book of Job. The problem is that the Bible is coded. And there's only 66 books in the Bible because there are many books that weren't able to get into the Old Testament especially and the New Testament because they didn't go with what the party line was.
Right. I did a show on that just recently with Joseph Lumpkin on the Lost Books of Christianity on Enoch and other fascinating.
Well, those books are from the Nag Hammadi Library and the Nag Hammadi Library is non sequitur to most biblical scholars because they don't want to have their focus of what is, quote, really supposed to be in the Old and New Testament rattled. And when you don't understand something, when you don't want to understand something, you push it away as not being valid. And that's exactly what's being done. And the reason why religions... very, very clear the reason why religions have not accepted reincarnation. It's very simple, Kim, and that is it would take their power away and their monetary base. Because if we keep it as it is, which has the belief in what I call monolife, that's my term. If you believe in monolife, you believe that this is the only life that there is. And that means that even if a baby lives 1 minute, that's all that she gets. That's it. If you live for 35 years, that's it. You've got to become absolutely perfected in 35 years. You tell me how that's possible. It's impossible. And so if the whole idea is to learn and grow and to do it in one lifetime, I don't think so. Why is it that someone comes in and they're a pilot or the other person is a shopkeeper or the other person is a carpenter, and the other person is a teacher. Another person is a seamstress. I mean, what makes somebody do whatever they do? Why are you in the field that you're in mass communications, and trying to educate people? Why am I doing what I'm doing? Because it's something that you said that you wanted to do prior to this lifetime, something that was not happening with you and for you and to you. in other lifetimes that you were not able to complete for some reason. And so you have the opportunity to begin it again and to do something that for you is important.
The Akashic Records, when I first heard about it many, many years ago, it was not until a few years ago that we had verification beyond what you're saying and what you've written that they really exist. Even though people have had hunches and near-death experiences, knows that there's more than what we're living in now, the remote viewers, for them to be able to do what they're doing, there has to be an Akashic record. There has to, of the past, the present, and the future. What's wild about a part of it, fascinating, but also kind of makes you wonder, is there really free will? Sometimes they're able to go in and they can already tap into a future that we're not even aware of yet, almost like time traveling. And I don't want to confuse what I'm saying, but for the remote viewers to be able to do what they do, there has to be an Akashic record. When I found out that they could do what they could do, aside from what you do, it was 1,000% clear to me that the Akashic records exist, the Book of Life exists, and it settled the matter for me. And that is extremely exciting, but it changes a perspective on how you live in the day-to-day. The things we say behind the scenes, the words that come out of our mouth, the thoughts that we project onto others. Every thought, word, and deed is recorded. Fascinating. Can we talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls, or is there anything else you want to say about this?
Yeah, there is. I don't agree with some of the remote viewers, because unless you can really tell what is happening in the present, and they can be a remote viewer in the present, and that absolutely can happen, because there is no such thing as time. I'm not sure that someone can look forward into the future, because on the timeline here of Earth, we live a linear existence. You know, 1 and 1 are 2, and 2 are 2 or 4. We don't look at time as a spiral going up. We look at it as linear, like a cross, like a ruler. And for someone to look into the future, something that hasn't happened yet, I believe that it's possible, but I'm not sure that anyone has done it yet. I really can't ratify that, so I would have to say that I'm still out on that question. I know that when I see the future, I don't see it verbatim. My guide gives me information that if I get it correctly from her, I would say I'm almost 100% correct. But she's the one that sees it, so I do know it exists, because she's beyond that linear timeline. And that's the big thing. So I would say a linear question I would ask to his linear concept is whether these souls that are doing the remote viewing have a guide or a teacher to help them, especially going into the future. And what is their God-centeredness? To me, I don't do anything without God. So yeah. I want to know where God is in their work.
Well,
and I'm not in any way criticizing anyone.
No, I totally understand. It's a whole other subject. It's a great introspective comment you just made. I interviewed Paul Smith, who was one of the first people trained in the remote viewing teams, and Simeon Hine out of Colorado. But anyway, what do you think about the Dead Sea Scrolls? Can you explain what they are to the public and why they're so important?
Yes, I will try. The Dead Sea Scrolls are, we're not being told, but there are over 800 scrolls that were found, but we're not told that. And it was found in the Dead Sea area in Israel. And these Dead Sea Scrolls are found in different caves. And I believe the year is May of 1947, where a little shepherd boy with a goat, the goat got lost in a cave, and the little boy went up and trying to find the goat, and he found these big urns. And he saw what they were and brought one of the scrolls that were in the urns back to his uncle. The uncle was a very, very greedy man, and tried to sell them on the market, and found that he was able to sell them. I'm skipping over a lot here. And the point is that they, the Arabs really burned a lot of the Dead Sea Scrolls for the equivalent of firewood. They just burned them. They didn't care. And so a lot of them were burned. However, fortunately, most of them were saved. And they wound up in the hands of people who didn't look at them as the holy objects that they are, with the tremendous amount of information that they held. They looked at them as money. And these were basically Arabs, and it got into the hands, finally, of those who were able to put them aside. Now, they're split up now. Some of them are in the scroll of the Shrine of the Book, which is located in Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Some are in the Jordanian Museum in Jordan. And there's some, I understand, in a museum in Russia. And the ones that I know of that are... there's some also in the Vatican, the secret archives of the Vatican in Italy. The ones that we have the most of, to my knowledge, are in Israel. And there is, under the Shrine of the Book and under the Temple Mount, a huge storage area that has a tremendous amount of security, where anyone going in without permission would have to go through three very, very deadly security systems of not only electric, but gas and all kinds of stuff to even get close to where these other scrolls are laying down there and waiting to be brought out to the light of day, which I don't think that they will be because of the content of what's in those scrolls. The big scroll that is in the Shrine of the Book, which is one that anyone can go in and see, is the really big Isaiah scroll. And this Isaiah scroll is out there for people to see. It's beautiful, and it's the biggest one that they have. However, there are bits and pieces of others. They're only telling us, and they've only said to us, that there was only one copper scroll, and it was a treasure list. It was a treasure list of all these different temple treasures, you know, the menorah and the shewbread table and so forth, that were taken out of the temple before it was burned, the first temple before it was burned, and hidden away here and there. And no one has ever been able to find these treasures yet. Now, they never said that there was more than one copper scroll. And so I found out recently that there was more than one copper scroll. And the second copper scroll, like the first one, was opened too quickly. Copper had to be heated to about 83, 85 degrees in order for it to come open easily. And so the first person opened it in haste, and it cracked open. So they tried to put it back together. They can't. So it's called copper scroll number one and copper scroll number two. And so in that copper scroll, there is a lot of information that the other scrolls do not have. And I said to you that there were over 800 Dead Sea Scrolls that were found.
Is that verifiable?
Is that verifiable? Not by the Israel Antiquities Office. They're going to deny everything I'm saying. Because what I'm saying to you is very secret information. I can't even tell you where I've gotten it. Sorry about that.
How will this help us?
Because you understand much more of what the Bible should have said and didn't say, especially about you and I as human beings and what the purpose of humanity is on this planet and the extraterrestrial connection and the truth about what happened with Moses, when the Exodus, the truth of what happened with Noah and how the ark got built, the true information about other interesting Bible stories that were not given the light of day, and also about the E.T. connection.
Do you want to talk about the E.T. connection?
In relationship to this, or just the E.T. connection?
What do our space brothers and sisters have to tell us? Who are they? People have very different takes on this all over the world, and I would like to know from an Akashic Record perspective, who are they and what are they?
They look just like you and I. However, they could be taller, they could be a little shorter. The true brothers are not these, what are called the grays, you know, the bug-eyed idiots. That's what I call them. They're absolute idiots, and they are you know, I don't use that word, but they are, and they're clones. And they have no soul whatsoever, and they have no compunction whatsoever about hurting us, and they do. And they were given the go-ahead by the Truman administration, take whatever citizens that they wanted for experiments. And in return, they would get different kinds of weapons. Remember, World War II was still happening at that time.
Right.
And we kept our word. We should never have done that. But we did, and the these Greys did not keep their word, and they're still taking human beings. And there are abductions. These are not the space creatures that I'm talking about. I don't even call them human beings or beings. They're just not. This has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. Who I'm talking about, because there's been all kinds of information out there about, you know, the horror stories of this, and it's just not at all. I'm not saying that the Greys haven't done terrible work. They have. However, the true space brothers are literally messengers from God. They are kind. They are loving. They are masters in their own right. I don't use that word easily. They are literally at least on the fifth dimension of consciousness and higher. They, and I refer to them kind of like as a lump of coal that stuck to their job and became a diamond. We're still a little bit on the lump of coal area. Not you and I, and not maybe the people who are listening to this segment. Because just by the virtue of the fact that you're listening this length of time says that you are a soul that most likely is more highly evolved than other people, which is a good thing. So the issue here is that these beings come from other planets in this, and moons in this and other adjacent solar systems. They've come here to help, pardon me, groping humanity in their divine ascent forward and upward. And they're here to help us to not make a mess of our life. They have stopped, I know this for, again, my fact, it doesn't have to be someone else's fact, for a fact that they have stopped World War III from happening many times by people putting their finger on the button and then that finger was taken off that button.
Right. I remember having a conversation years ago on television with Dr. Carol Rosen, who was there with Wernher von Braun, and how she talked about missile silos have just been disconnected.
That's right.
Inability to move forward when they were pressed to go suddenly out of nowhere. I just wonder, is it Space Brothers or is that the hand of God? It's hard to know the distinction here. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, the Space Brothers act as a messenger of God. And they act very quickly. And God has asked Space Brothers, the true ones, that look just like us, to intervene, because very honestly, there was a planet in our system, I think I may have told you, in Maldek, and it was, man, you know, long, 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 long time ago, and it blew itself up with nuclear and atomic power. And it messed up the entire ring of planets, because every planet is in its circular trajectory around the sun, its rotation around the sun. And we had to bring Pluto in, the planet that is now Pluto, in to fill that space. And the people from Maldek came to this world, and some of them were very bad, some of them were good. And they landed on what is now called Atlantis, or what was to be called Atlantis, and it wasn't at that time. It was called Quilla, Quilla, and it changed. It had even changed its name to Atar. But the Maldekians had a continent on Maldek called Atlantis, and then just renamed it. And so the Atlanteans are back, essentially. The really good ones are back also, but the bad ones are back, and they're re-remembering what it is they've anciently done. And so some of these people are being confronted by the Space Brothers upstairs. And the Space Brothers will not permit, they can do this, they will not permit any planet, especially Earth, because we're the lowest lowest planet in our system. They will not let the human beings here on Earth destroy Earth because it's going to hurt all the other planets and the moons in our system, comma, again. And they're not going to allow that to happen. And so they're going to do everything possible to stop the proliferation of agreements to destroy each other.
How do you hold in context your connection with Jesus, for example, Yeshua, and yet in the same context be able to comfortably talk about the Space Brothers and how they're helping us? How are their roles different?
They're not different. They're just doing something different but the same purpose. The soul that is now, well, that was called Yeshua ben Yosef, Jesus the son of Joseph, is the highest being, you know, literally next to God. And among other things, he has total control over a solar system. And so his name right now is said to be Sananda, S-A-N-A-N-D-A, Sananda. And he definitely is the Christ, definitely. And so the Sananda consciousness literally is in connection with, direct connection with, those that are the good ships and the ones that pilot those ships. And they take instructions from him who gets instructions from God. There is no difference.
Do you agree that we're in what's called the end times?
Yes, I do.
Explain what that means from your point of view.
How can I say? Every civilization that has existed more than 200 to 300 years comes to a decline period. That's usually what happens. And we've been in existence now as the United States for about 250 years. And we're going the same way as Rome. We have very, very many of the same anti-attributic, I just made up a word, anti-attributic symptoms as ancient Rome did. We have the same symbols. We really do. We have the eagle. We have, you know, colosseums and so forth. We have the same kind of government, a Senate. The issue is, however, is that Rome also had a decadent society, very, very decadent. And, you know, last time I talked about the Ten Commandments, and I said, look, they're not 10 suggestions. And if you look, and if you're a really good student of Rome, they broke every one of them. They broke every one of them. And so I'm saying, here, we have to read them again and make them first. In every one of the great world's religions, those Ten Commandments, they really are one way or the other. But we don't listen to them. And so there is a time now, and it's been foretold in so many of the historical times here, the historical moments of prophecy. I think in the last time I told you that I had already counted that there were, I mean, 12 or 13. I talked about the Hopi and the Inca prophecies, the Mayan prophecies, Sir Isaac Newton, King, Mother Shipton, the Bible Code, the Great Pyramid, the Bot Project, Casey and Nostradamus. They're all pointing to the same date of 2012, and some of them are even more specific, and they talk about December 12th. The Mayan calendar and the Bible Codes specifically say December 21st. 2012, they're very specific. Now, there's something that's happening there. If they're that specific, something's happening. And so you and I have realized, all of us, those of you who are listening to this, you realize when you reincarnated here some decades ago that you would be in a time that would be very meaningful for humanity. And I said to you, my closing words in the last session was, be not afraid. Not a hair is going to be ruptured or taken away from your head. And so there is going to be, as far as the end times are concerned, I think I covered this last time, what I call rocking and rolling. Absolutely, there will be more tornadoes, more earthquakes, more volcanoes. I mean, look at Iceland. Iceland has two major volcanoes now. The one that erupted a month ago or so, there's another one, they call it a sister volcano. If it erupts, it's going to be bigger than the other one.
I heard that, actually.
That's what I heard. Yeah, I don't know that. I'm not a meteorologist, but that's what I heard on television. And You have all kinds of earth movement. We haven't been nice to our planet. Our planet is our mother, and we haven't treated her well. And, of course, look at what's happening in the Gulf. And so these are the end times, and there's going to be a time when, you know, you need to get near water. I'm talking about fresh water that can be drink, that can be drunk, because a gallon of water, you won't be able to get it for less than $100. Water is going to be very, very valuable. Very valuable.
What do you think about prophecy like St. Malachi? Have you read that?
Yeah. Are you talking about the popes?
Right.
Yeah, according to Malachi, the pope that now is in Benedict is the next to the last one. I mean, you know, he's been right so far, so very possible that he's right. He's been very correct.
Do you think that we are going to be a population that, due to a state of emergency in the times to come, will allow ourselves to be chipped?
Yes, I do. I hope that those of you out there will not allow yourself to be chipped, because I believe that that is the mark of the beast. And when we began with the marking that's on all of our fruits and vegetables and canned goods and packaging, you know, the codes and everything on your on everything you buy, that was the beginning of this mark. It really was the beginning of it. The good thing is, you know, I don't want to focus on this the horrible things that are going to happen, but I do feel that, and I know I covered this a little bit in the last session, that the evangelicals call it like the rapture. We're going to be taken up into the clouds with Jesus and to meet Jesus in the air. Now, there's a part of me that believes that, but I also believe that there's going to be help for that happening. And I believe that there, because I see them up there with my soul's eyes, not physically, because I'll look up at the skies and I can see hundreds of ships up there and no one else can see them, and I just keep quiet. But I do see hundreds of ships up there when I go out, and I know that they're ready. You know, welcome to Beam Up City. And not everyone is going to be taken up. They don't want to have our stuff brought up to their planet and to, and their ships. You know, they don't want to have our decadence up there, and they shouldn't have it. And so those people who haven't, you know, gone in the right direction, the God direction, are going to remain here to go through that very difficult tribulation that's going to come. Yes, I do feel that. I have to say, I've studied a lot about it, and you can put whatever words in there that you want, but it basically is the same thing. If you want to put beam up instead of, you know, being translated in the sky with Jesus, that's fine. But the point is that it's going to happen. You're not going to be here to go through this end time, this tribulation. But as I said with the story of St. Francis, I've said this a lot, St. Francis is hoeing his garden. All right? And he's hoeing his garden, and the master is out there, he's hoeing his garden. And one of the dear monks comes up and says, "Brother Francis, can I ask you a question?" And dear Francis says, "Yes, my son," and he keeps hoeing his garden. He says, "Brother, if the Archangel Michael were to come down right now and to tell you that at the end of this day, you would die and go to heaven, what would you do? Would you, you know, figure out what you need to do for this person and that person and get your affairs in order? What would you do?" And without skipping a beat and still hoeing his garden, he looks up at the monk and looks down back at the garden again. He says, "No, my son, I would still keep hoeing my garden." You know, keep doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do anything out of fear. Do something because it's the right thing to do. If God places something in your lap to do, do it. If God tells you to help Murgatroyd over here, then do it. If God helps you to see within your soul that you have to do this, this, and this, then do it. Don't think in your heart, gee, it's only, you know, 2.5 years to 2012. Why don't I just lay down and do nothing anyway? No, not going to do good for you. Can't do it. You've got to work up to the very last minute.
A lot of people have a concern right now. I hear murmurs out there of, Where should I move? Where should I go? Where is the best place to go? Because a lot of people feel something is off kilter bad. And it's not just because of the Gulf Coast. The Gulf Coast is something that's visceral that you can see, that's an obvious manifestation of many things that allowed that to happen. But a lot of people are asking where to go.
Well, we are off kilter. We are off kilter by a number of degrees. Even with the tsunami in, was it Pao Alto? I forget the name of the Philippine nation that was so decimated with the tsunami. That, from what I understand from the Weather Channel, threw the Earth off of about 2 degrees off of its axis. 2 degrees. Now, the Earth has been off its axis many more degrees than that. And so we're literally off kilter here. We're literally not, you know, settled. We're wobbling. And this is part of what's going to be happening on the December 21st, 2012 thing, where astronomers say that there's going to be this alignment that's going to be coming up, and it's going to be a grand wobble, according to them.
Astrophysicists say that what they're seeing is that right now we're in what's called a solar minimum. And when that happens, there's solar flares, and there's usually an electromagnetic communication to the Earth that could put our Earth in danger. If this solar minimum continues, and we do have solar flares, and they interrupt the poles, we could experience something unimaginable. And that's one of the great concerns of the solar physicists right now, that could be part of something coming in the next few years. I wanted to ask you before we close this segment today, if there's anything else you would like to share that comes to mind about how we need to be living and how we need to be holding the energy right now with regard to what's happening in the Gulf Coast. There's a lot of outcry and upset, and there's a lot of mismanagement occurring and a lot of political juggling. And I'm wondering what your take is on how we be in the day-to-day as we watch this movie going on called The Gulf Coast.
As with anything that the politicians and the high rollers monetarily have their hands in, there's going to be a tremendous amount of greed, not only for money but for power. And everyone is saying, I'm telling you the truth, I'm telling you the truth. The most important lesson that you and I and everyone out there is learning today, every human being, is discernment. I think I've spoken to you about this.
Yes.
Discernment, not only in our personal world, personal relationships with people, but what we deem to be truth. What is the truth? And when you understand that, you have to understand what truth is, then you're going to be close to what wisdom is. Knowledge is fine. You can learn that from a book or from a teacher. Wisdom, however, is applied knowledge, and it's the ability to discern right from wrong. The ability to say, this is the direction I'm going to go, and this is the direction I will not go in, and stick with it until such time that your discernment says, all right, we need to make another course correction. Having said that, if you feel that something is wrong in the Gulf, and it certainly is, instead of complaining and being upset about it, which is not helping anyone, first of all, you pray about it. You see the entire waters of the world and get a map if you don't have a true understanding of what the world looks like. I'm sure you can get a map online and see what that whole area of the Gulf Coast looks like. And the world, because that oil spill is going to go all over the world if the currents take it to where I think it's going to go. And you want to see the water crystal blue, a beautiful blue. No oil, no silt, nothing. You're going to see it in your mind's eye. You don't see the oil. Don't focus on the oil. Just picture it blue, that you can see through it like a beautiful piece of blue glass. And you have to say to yourself, I'm not going to complain anymore. I'm going to heal my planet. And you send love to this planet. You send love to the planet. That's number two. And number three, you ask yourself, okay, what can I do as a citizen of the United States? What can I do? And so you have a congressman. You have a senator. Call the senator's office, call the congressman's office, and say, what are you doing personally on behalf of my state to help with the oil spill? What are you doing? I need to know. And they have to tell you. They say, well, go on my website. Okay, go on the website. And if you don't like what they're doing or not doing, tell them. It's real simple. And so there's three things. And you stay after it. You stay after it. You get your love, your light, and your healing out there. But you try to do it in a positive way. Instead of complaining, look to see what you can encourage. Encourage in your senator. Encourage in your representative what they already know is right.
I actually followed that sage advice, and I prayed about it for many weeks. I struggled about, should I do a piece on it? If I do a piece, how could I contribute to the situation rather than get wrapped around in the politics of it? And I've done two segments in doing what you just said. One is on getting the public to understand what is the geologic state of affairs, what can be done literally, concretely, what's the task? I interviewed a geologist who had done 50 high-pressure wells. And then I did a piece of having the public understand the whole systems aspect of what it's like when a contractor works with subcontractors and they're using security parts from those subcontractors, who the other subcontractors are that's involved, and on a whole systems level, what needs to be done to correct this so that other wells that may go off that are in danger of going off can get taken care of, and to preserve the wells that really need to be secured, which are not. Those are the two pieces I did, and those are the only ones that I've been guided to do so far. But it was agonizing for many weeks because I wanted to do something, but I hadn't found the correct person or information who could relay it to the public in a proper way to lift the situation. But I'm very glad I did the segments I did. Very glad.
Good. I was going to ask you how you felt about it, and you just told me how you felt about it.
Well, I feel great inner anguish, and I felt it was imperative that the public understand what's within the realm of doability to manage the expectations, and yet at the same time, what kind of speed we can look at if those remedies are embraced. And I really want that to go viral all over the world, particularly all over the United States, so that people can see that this is doable and do not get lost in the endless hype and the drama and the scaremongering that's going on with a lot of shows that we're all doomed. I really don't want to contribute to that, even if this could go on for longer than any of us can fathom. I don't want to be part of contributing to that doom and gloom and terror and all that. I won't do it. And if there's more, then I will be led with other concrete, critical information that's parlayed in a calm way to the public so that the public can let their friends and their colleagues and their loved ones and their associates know how doable this is and not to be lured in by people that are trying to get media attention using the Gulf as their ticket to ride the public mind. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure do.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'd like to read you?
Please.
I put out, and I sent this to many of my clients, I wrote this in September of 1998, and it has everything to do with what's happening now. And I call it A Prayer for Our Nation. And I dedicate it to all these of your souls that are listening to this. And any of you, if you wish, you can write this down, and you can spread it around. And if you wish, you can give me a little credit for it. That would be nice. If not, just spread the prayer around if you wish. God, we ask your blessings on our nation as we are experiencing uncertainty with our leaders and their actions. We ask for clarity in our thoughts as we seek your help so that we may become a unified nation. We need to go beyond this turmoil of confusion and to seek a greater wisdom, your wisdom. We need to go beyond the collective weakness because of the heavy diversity of thoughts and to seek a greater strength, your strength. We need to see beyond the small thoughts of heavy judgments and to seek to comprehend mercy, your mercy. Help us to dynamically see beyond the confusion and into your clarity. Lift us up from our petty thoughts that only bring more fear into our hearts and into our homes, and show us how to forgive ourselves for these thoughts so that we may teach our children a greater truth, your truth. Help us to reach out to you and only to you to repair the wounds of our nation and our leaders. Help us to bring this land that we have adopted as our own into wholeness and strength through your love. Show us our lessons as a people in these troubled days. Teach us once again the lessons of your wisdom, your strength, your mercy, your clarity, your truth, and your enduring love. Amen and amen.
Amen, and so it is. That's beautiful. Thank you for contributing your time and being a guest on this show and discussing so many complex subjects for our listeners. And it's been a real honor. And I really appreciate it.
You've done a very good job here.
I hope that we will bring you back.
I would love it.
I'm doing an interview in a few weeks with Art Levitt, who has done quite extensive work on the Bible codes using Eli Ripp's sequential
spacing. I know who Art Levitt is. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah. Great. So I'd like to invite you back and thank you so much for your time. You're awesome.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to, learning from, and speaking with Roberta Herzog, the author of The Akashic Records, Your Journey Through Time and Ancient Wisdom Stories. You can reach Roberta at robertaherzog.com. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon, Roberta Herzog.
Bye-bye, dear.